Hi, this is Eli, the King of Broadway, talking with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By on UNC Radio.
Shalom, shalom, is this the Melech? Is this the King?
It's good to be the King, yes it is.
It is good to be the King. Well, you are king of your own throne. I have my own domain here on the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air, and I'm very excited to be talking to a man who not only bills himself, but is considered in a way the King of Broadway, Eli, the King of Broadway. And he's also in some ways the King of Judaism and Jewish music. We will explain in this interview that we are doing with Eli specifically for the Chanukah holiday. He's going to be doing two shows at the Metropolitan Room on West 22nd Street on December 21st and December 22nd. It's Eli, the King of Broadway, and friends. Among those friends, we'll talk about that too. Let me just introduce this man who is an actor and a singer. He is also, honest to gosh, a rabbi and a cantor. Now you may ask, how the hell is this man being on the radio on Shabbos on this Saturday morning? And the answer, of course, is that we had to pre-tape this interview. So this is not airing live. God will not take a lightning bolt and strike both of us dead. We're not actually here, but you're here listening. We welcome you, and we especially welcome Eli, the King of Broadway. Welcome, Eli.
Thank you, Rabbi Saul Solomon.
Thank
what
you.
What a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure now. You may not say the same thing in 20 minutes, but for now, it's very pleasurable. So, let me ask you, Eli, when did you realize you wanted to be an actor person?
Oh, that was very, very, very early on in life. The North Valley JCC in Los Angeles, California, was putting on Milk and Honey.
This is a Jerry Herman musical about the birth of Israel, or early years of Israel. And by the way, for our Goyish listeners, of which there are many, and actually there are too many, we have too many Goyish listeners. Some of the Goyim tune out and let the Jews take a try. But JCC stands for Jewish Community Center. Okay, sorry, continue. I just wanted to fill in some gaps there. Milk and Honey, yes?
Yes, so I tried out and I was given the role of the little Arab boy.
Go figure. Yeah.
And I sang the opening song, Why Can't My Sheep Walk Down the Street?
Oh, God. Right, yeah.
That is it. And I guess being an Ashkenazic Jew living in the San Fernando Valley in 1960, I wasn't dark enough. So they smeared makeup all over my face so I would be a nice, dark little Arab Jewish boy. That was it.
So you've got a Schwarzer Arab child who can't bring the sheep down the street, I guess because they'd be raping them or something, and they were all bow-legged. I don't know what the Arabs do in the desert.
But I have no idea. I don't think that was in the movie when they finally did it.
I would certainly hope.
That was my first role, and I was hooked. I wanted to do theater from that point on, and my parents enrolled me in the local theaters in Los Angeles, and I auditioned. I was on the Mickey Mouse Club.
No! Really? On the TV?
Oh, yes. Yes, in Disneyland.
Did you have the beard at that point?
Disneyland. I had the beard, but it hadn't come out yet. It was all internal.
Yeah.
So that continued. I did it all through elementary school. And in elementary school, actually, I got some friends together and started doing some pantomimes.
Like English panto?
It wasn't particularly Jewish at the time, but we would do these little skits to music. The favorite songs I did was Always, and we would do this little routine with a drunk hobo on the street and a police officer rousing him. And I was very young. I was 6, 7 years old when I first did that.
Wait, so you would be doing that bit to I'll Be Loving You Always, that would be the song?
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Cool.
That we would, the drunk would be there, and the cop would rouse him. You know, the cop would hit him with the stick and accidentally knock him out, and then have to give him a little drink from his bottle to revive him. And we just did all kinds of shtick, and I was doing that with my friends. And then we started memorizing the famous Abbott and Costello routine, Who's on First.
Oh well, there you go. Yeah, you go. Because let's face it, the idea of police brutality is so outdated that it never happens anymore. So it's not like it's an issue anymore.
Thank God.
Yeah, right. There you go. Okay, let me ask you something, Ellie, the King of Broadway. Is it true that you turned down the opportunity to go to the Fame School, the High School of the Performing Arts?
Yes. Yes, I did. Wow, I didn't know you knew that story.
I just made that up, but I out of whole cloth, and there you go. I got it right. What happened? Why you did this because you're a Jew, right?
I did. I went from playing the little Arab boy to playing Arab in West Side Story in high school. See a little pattern there?
Yeah. You didn't blow up anything, did you? Okay, yeah.
No, didn't blow anything up. But performing in high school, I was Julius Caesar in an updated version of Caesar where all the guards were in Italian uniforms, and Caesar was supposed to represent Mussolini. It was
okay.
Nouveau art thing that my drama teacher's son had done in New York and decided it should be done in high school. Went over real well.
Do I detect sarcasm in your voice?
Just a drop, right?
Well, actually, if you ever see Titus Andronicus, the Julie Taymor movie, that's partially updated to Italian fascism era, too, so it can be done. But I digress. Anywho, continue.
He did it, you know, fairly successfully off-Broadway in New York sometime in the early 70s. I don't know what it was called. But anyway, we did it in high school and went over like a lead balloon. Nobody understood it. But there we were in our nice fascist Italian uniforms.
Giulio Cesare, yeah.
Yep, exactly. And I had done some other roles, and one day after one of the Julius Caesar performances, somebody approached me after the show and told me that he was a scout for the High School of Performing Arts. And interested in going. And we started talking about it, and I told him at that point that I was Shomer Shabbos. I was an observant Jew and kept the Sabbath, didn't perform on Friday nights and Saturdays, and wanted to make sure that wouldn't be a problem. And he said, well, you know, we have a lot of our shows on Friday nights and Saturdays.
Oh, that's true.
Well, then I cannot go.
Do you
any accommodation? And he said, no, there's no accommodation for that. And so I turned it down.
You eventually became a more orthodox person, a rabbi. You were raised conservadox, but you were... Or do you ever regret that decision? Do you think that would make a difference if you said, I'm not going to be... Because you weren't orthodox even at that point, were you?
Oh, yes, yes.
I mean, well, you must have been, yeah.
I had gotten involved with the Chabad-Lubavitch movement in my teens at about 15 and a half. And by the time I graduated high school, I was, you know, a fully observant Shabbos keeping, kosher keeping. I had my beard and my tzitzis out, always had my hair covered. And so, yeah, I was my head
so
covered.
Were, yeah.
And I was a 100% Hasidic Jew by that point.
And so
were going to let me get around Shabbos, we had something to talk about. But if not, no dice.
And no regrets.
No regrets at all. Took me into a different path, but it was a good path. I went away to a rabbinical school in Morristown, New Jersey, and got my ordination as a rabbi. And because I sang, I was also a cantor from an early age, and went into teaching. Ended up in Miami Beach, Florida, after graduating rabbinical school.
Now, hold on. Now, wait. Yeah. The Lubavitches are known for, on some level, for sending Jews to places where there aren't that many Jews, and they want to beef up the Jewish population. Say that there'll be some kind of, what are they, an Ufruf or something? An Uriv or this thing where they'll say, oh, you go here and start a congregation, etc. But they sent you to Miami. We don't need Jews in Miami. What the hell?
They did. It's very funny, but you'd think that there was some kind of orthodoxy in Miami, Miami Beach, in the early 70s. I went in 1975, but the truth of the matter is there were very few Orthodox synagogues on Miami Beach at that time. It had become a very a very non-Orthodox.
I see. So there were tons of Jews there, but they weren't the pious.
They weren't observant.
Got it.
They weren't observant Jews. And so the other thing was that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted to start a yeshiva and ordain rabbis down there. And at that point, he called Miami Beach the gateway to the Americas, to South America.
And a year or two, it'll be the gateway to Cuba. They've just announced.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know?
Absolutely.
Huh.
What a wonderful thing. First day of Hanukkah, we had Alan Gross released, right?
I know.
Hanukkah miracle.
Let me ask, you never stopped being a rabbi. I mean, I guess Jackie Mason is still a rabbi. Are you still a rabbi?
I am still a rabbi. I don't have a physical building that I call my congregation, but it's very funny because I've kind of become a rabbi to the entertainment community. Many of the Jewish actors and actresses, the comedians, singers, Broadway stars, come to my home Friday night and Shabbos day to have Shabbos meals with me, and we talk Torah and we consult about things. I just sent out a tweet to all my followers about when to light the menorah tonight and how to light. So yeah, you never stop. It's always there.
You definitely, when you're lighting the menorah, this is very important. You want to light the end that has the wick on it. Otherwise, you're standing there, you're getting wax all over the place, and half the candles burn down before.
It's very true.
Yeah, you've got to have that wick part. Now, you have also Ellie, the King of Broadway. It's not just that you're kind of this father figure, this friend to the Jewish community of actors in the sense of having a meal together and, as friends, but you, in a positive way, do racial profiling for the entertainment industry, or at least you were doing this for many years, when a movie or a TV show needs a real Yid, you're who they turn to. Tell us about this.
That's true. When I first moved to New York from Florida, it was because I had decided to get back into theater and film and TV, and I had been flying back and forth from Fort Lauderdale to New York to attend auditions, and I'd get home, and a week later I'd get, you know, we need you to come back, we need to see you again, and that started to get expensive. So I finally decided to pack up the car and move to New York City, and, you know, you got to have a parnassa, you have to have some kind of an income. So I started getting into background work, and...
Background work meaning, what is background work, please?
Background work is when you see a street scene or a bar scene, all the people that are in the room or all the people that are walking down the street are paid by the TV show or the movie to be there. Otherwise, they have to get releases and permissions and all kinds of crazy things. So when you see cars driving, those are provided by the actors usually. And when you see people walking down the street with James Marsden, as you see me in a couple of movies and a 30 Rock with him, these people are all hired. I used to call them extras, now they call them backgrounds, because that's basically what they are. They're the background. You don't really notice them because you're looking at the star, but they're there.
Cool. Now, did you have an under five? Did you have any lines in 30 Rock, or were you background in that?
30 Rock, I didn't have any lines, but I'm pretty visible in one of the episodes where James Marsden attends an Israeli day parade with his handstand.
Oh, okay. And did they shoot that at the Israeli Day Parade in May, or they just made it? No.
No, it was shot on another day.
Oh, okay. But it's not just you. I mean, this is you doing the background, but eventually, what did they ask you to do, the producers of these things?
Well, like I said, I was one of the, you know, 15 or 20 guys that they would call when they needed to show a, you know, Hasidic Jew walking down the street. And then after a while, it started to be I was one of, you know, 5 or 10 guys. And then it started to be that I was the guy they called first. And then they started asking me to provide them with other people. We did an episode of Law & Order SVU that we had 85 Hasidic backgrounds in the synagogue scene. And then we did New York, I Love You. We did the scene that was directed by Mira Nair.
Oh, wow.
With Natalie Portman.
Ah, Natalie Portman. A fine Jewess.
Right. You know, I have a funny story about that. My picture ended up in a place that I never thought my picture would be. I ended up in Glamour magazine.
Okay.
I'm a big guy with a beard. I'm not by any means bad looking, but I'm certainly not fodder for Glamour magazine. Mm-hmm. How does Rabbi Ellie get in Glamour magazine?
Yeah.
I was in a movie with Natalie Portman. She played a Jewish bride, and she had this beautiful wedding dress. And somebody took a picture of myself standing next to Natalie in that dress and sold it to Glamour magazine.
There you go.
Rabbi Ellie ended up on the pages of Glamour magazine.
As background, in a manner of speaking.
Background, and I was actually a consultant for the film. I worked very closely with Mira Nair to get all the takes right, to make sure that the Hasidic wedding was portrayed properly, and you know how we lift the groom in the chair and all of this stuff. We had some kinks in there, but they all got worked out. She was very cooperative.
Well, you've mentioned in another interview that there's a balancing act that producers and directors have to do, because they have to show the rest of the world, 98% of which isn't Jewish, that, oh, these are Orthodox Jewish characters. But at the same time, they've got to consult with you to make their stereotypes not too stereotypical and not offensive to the actual Jewish community. It's a weird line you've got to walk.
It is, and what got me into that was a movie, I think it was Melanie Griffith, called The Stranger Among Us.
Oh, yeah.
The portrayal of the Orthodox community in that was so off the wall wrong. It was just the director took nothing that was told to him by the Jewish actors that he had in the room that said, you know, we're not religious, but I don't think this is how the Hasidic world does this. And he said, well, this is my vision of how it's done. It was so offensive that it was then and there I decided that I was going to get involved in this business.
Well, can I ask you, what's an example of something in that film? Because I haven't seen that movie in 30 years. What's an example in that film of something that's, you just put your head in your hands and you're like, I cannot believe this?
Well, they start out with the rabbi making the kiddush, the sanctification over the wine on Friday night.
Uh-huh. And what, is Yoo-hoo?
I don't know what they put in there. It was probably whiskey for all I know. And
yeah.
Instead of going to wash his hands to make the blessing over the bread, he just immediately grabs the challah, makes the blessing, tears pieces off, and throws them around the table.
All right. Well, it's not the Afikoman. You can tear them, but okay, yeah.
We're particularly careful that this is food that God has granted us permission to eat, and we're blessing the food. We're making a statement. We're thanking God for bringing forth the food, the bounty of the earth for us to eat. We don't throw it.
I have this image of Jews hurling bread at each other.
Well, go watch the movie again. That's what happens.
Are there any other howlers?
Oh, yeah.
And then
in that same scene, he decides to dance. He's a Hasidic Rebbe.
Okay.
He decides to dance. So everybody gets up in their seats and all hold hands, boy, girl, boy, girl, boy, girl, which they would never do at a Hasidic table. You know, the men would be on one side of the table, the women would be on the other side, and they certainly would not hold hands. And they all kind of just, you know, start bouncing around in place, and then they go around the table. It's a screecher. It really is.
God, did they start twerking, or they didn't leave? I don't know.
You know, let me tell you something. Had twerking been a thing back then?
They would have done it in the movie.
They would have. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We are chatting. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I was just going to say, we are chatting with Ellie. And I should say Eliezer Meyer, but you go by Ellie, the King of Broadway, and you can see him hosting a Hanukkah show. It is on December 21st and 22nd, so it's this weekend, right?
This Sunday and Monday.
So it's weekend and post-weekend at the Metropolitan Room on West 22nd Street by 6th Avenue, metropolitanroom.com for more information and tickets. And I should also mention there was a friend of the neighborhood taking part in this concert, by the way. Your musical director, Barry Levitt, was a guest on this.
Barry Levitt, the maestro.
Yeah, he was a guest on this radio program, oh my goodness, 7 or 8 years or so ago. So wish him our very best for me and Dave. He would know.
I will. And you know what, Dave? Rabbi Saul, that was about how long I've waited to work with him. We have tried to work together for years, but it never worked out. And now I'm thrilled to have him as part of my band, which I have named the Dreidels.
The Dreidels! That gets a gimmel from me right there. Oh, my God. So tell us, what is the camp? You've already done it last year. So what is it, and how is this year different from last year? Why is this night different from the other night? Wrong holiday, I know.
This year we have a bigger band. We have a Barry Levitt on piano. Then we have a saxophone player, a guitar player, a drummer, and a bass player this year.
Wow.
We've added a couple of songs. We've added a little more shtick, and it's just. Amazing event.
What is it, though? You're not telling me what should people expect to see? Are you doing Hanukkah songs? There aren't that many.
There is music. There is Hanukkah songs. You would be surprised. There are a lot of Hanukkah songs. We have Hanukkah songs from all around the world. We even have a Hanukkah song in Ladino.
That's weird Spanish thing, right?
That is. That's the Sephardic Yiddish.
Sephardic Yiddish, wow. Wow.
Correct.
Do you do the Adam Sandler? Sorry.
And then we have a pop song that was given to me by Warren Gratis of a group called the Belmonts.
Who sang with Dion, or not that Belmonts?
The famous Belmonts.
Oh, from Dion and the Belmonts, right?
That's correct.
Oh, wow. Whoa, Belmonts. That's cool. That's cool.
And it's called 8 Days of Hanukkah.
This is, well, good. At least it's not 15 Days of Hanukkah. At least I got that part right.
Yeah. So,
well, Dion DeMucci was not exactly a Yid. So, but let me ask you, are any of them amusing? Or did you do the Adam Sandler song? Are there other funny Hanukkah songs?
You know what? We stayed away from songs like that, but we have funny songs. We have a great song by Tom Lehrer called Hanukkah in Santa Monica.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes. Okay.
We have some songs that were written by Broadway musical writers, Ordinary Miracles and Trust the Wind.
Okay.
Everlasting Light, We Are Lights, written by Stephen Schwartz. One in there is by Stephen Sondheim. And
wait a minute. What Sondheim song is about Hanukkah?
Oh, I can't tell you that. You have to come to the show to see that one.
Oh, God damn it. That's not fair. Oh, my God. Now, I don't... It's not in the Into the Woods movie. I don't know. I'm trying to think.
Not from Into the Woods. There was no Hanukkah song from Into the Woods.
More kosher pies. More hot pies. No, there's nothing from that show. I'm trying to think.
No. Then we have a swing and dreidel song.
Oh, now we're talking.
Of course, the all-time favorite, Light One Candle.
Right. You gotta have that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of fun. That sounds, and again, you can see it this Sunday and Monday evening at the Metropolitan Room. You'll be singing and hosting and doing all of these things. How did the initial one last year come about?
I've been wanting to do a holiday-themed show, and the managing partner of the Metropolitan Room, Bernie Firschband.
Oh, yes.
He'd been pushing me to do a show. I hadn't done a show in about a year. I hadn't done a show there. And I said, you know what? Let's do one for Hanukkah. And he said, you tell me the days, and there are the slots. And
oh, that's
lovely. Year we decided we're going to do it annually, so this is year two. And we're even talking now about doing a show on Purim on March 4th.
Oh, it makes total sense. You must. You must.
Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily go for a Yom HaShoah cabaret show.
And I don't think we're going to do the Yom Kippur show either.
Really? People are starved for entertainment on that day. Tee-hee,
I know, but I think, Rabbi Saul, we're going to pass over that one.
Oh, I wish I knew a Yom Ha'atzmaut pun, but I don't. Alas, not.
So the show will have music, songs.
Hey, you know what? I have to say this, though.
The menorah.
I am a sucker for holiday shows.
There you go.
Thank you.
We would do one for sukkahs if we could build a big sukkah there, but there's no room in that part of Manhattan.
No, you can have like one twig, like a bough over one someone's head. That would be
That's
the
right.
closest.
People would have to circulate through. Although Chabad does have the mobile sukkahs, maybe we could work something out. I'll look into it.
Yeah. New York landlords would still charge $3,000 a month for it. Couldn't do it.
Most definitely.
Hey, we're having so much joy and so much fun with Ellie, the King of Broadway. Let's talk about the Holocaust.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Let's take a moment there. No, your parents, apparently they were survivors?
My parents are survivors. I'm first generation. Both parents came from Germany.
When?
My mother lived in a little town on the Dutch border called Meppen, and they were able to get out in 1939. Right after Kristallnacht.
Oh, wow.
And my father lived in Frankfurt, and they had to sneak out. They went through the whole Eastern European route, ended up in Shanghai, and came to Los Angeles on a slow boat from China.
Wow. So they were, in a way, they didn't survive the camps, but they survived the era, and they got the hell out of there.
My mother's father was not put in the camp. My father's father was in a holding camp in Frankfurt. He was there for 2 weeks, but he was a junk dealer, and they had a couple of bucks. They weren't able to take anything with them, but they had some money while they lived in Germany, and my grandmother was able to procure chocolate and silk stockings and bribe one of the guards for 2 weeks. Until he let my grandfather slip out on one of the work details before they took him to one of the final camps.
Wow, that is lucky. So
with that, they were able to get out. One of my uncles, who I found out later was not actually an uncle, was part of a group that stole a bunch of uniforms, forged some papers, stole a Nazi staff car and ran around collecting the family and getting them false affidavits to get them to America.
That's a hell of a... Did anybody ever write this down or tell this story? It's an amazing story.
I'll tell you the truth, and I'll put it out here to your wonderful listeners on Days Gone By on UNC Radio. My father wrote a book called 45 Days to Freedom. He sent it to the Holocaust Museum, but it got lost. Nobody seems to know where it is. He sent it out back in the early 70s. He sent it out all over Hollywood to try and get it made into a screenplay. But there were a bunch of Holocaust movies being made at the time, and he was told, we weren't ready for that now.
Okay.
So it sat in a box for years, and somehow it got lost. So if any of your listeners have any idea where that is, we'd love to have a copy.
So, oh my God, he never kept an original?
45 Days to Freedom. I was never given a copy. My father kept that very close. My parents, as many Holocaust survivors, were not so willing to talk about all their experiences. They like to keep it pretty close and not burden their children with...
So they told you one time, and that was kind of it. I mean, were there any horror stories that you remember them telling you?
No, none whatsoever.
How do you think... we'll lighten up in a moment or two, but I'm curious, how do you think that affected them psychologically? I mean, they were really lucky, let's face it. But living in Germany post-Kristallnacht, how do you think that affected them psychologically for the rest of their lives?
Oh, I know that when I was young, my mother used to have tremendously terrible nightmares. I do remember her waking up screaming in the middle of the night many, many times. And I was told she just had a bad dream, and it wasn't until later on in life that I understood that these were, stories of play with the other kids. She had to wear the yellow star on all of her clothing when she went outside. So there were little things that she told me, but, you know, none of the really terrible things.
Huh. And how has being the child of survivors informed you and the way you are?
It's always there in the back of my head, being first generation and you know, in the new world is always something I think about. Like I said, I wasn't exposed to a lot of it. When I was in possibly late junior high, one of our teachers had us read the Diary of Anne Frank. And it, again, I was, you know, just entering my teens. I was after bar mitzvah. And I went to my grandparents' house, my father's parents. I went to my grandparents' house for a weekend, and I was reading the book. And my grandmother said, you know, that's my cousin. I said, excuse me?
What?
And she said, yes, Anne Frank was my third cousin. So my father's first name, Frank, is my grandmother's maiden name. So we are, well, I don't know what that makes me, but my grandmother was Anne Frank's third cousin. So that was pretty intense when you're, you know, 14, 15 years old and you're reading this book for the first time, discovering the horrors that went on, and then somebody tells you, yeah, you know, you're related to that girl.
Wow. Wow. And by the way, the person who is related very, very tangentially to Anne Frank, we're talking to here on Dave's Gone By. His name is Ellie, the King of Broadway. And by the way, I will remind people again that this particular interview is airing on Saturday morning, but we are pre-recording this.
Oh, you're right.
Earlier in the week, just so you know, because he is an Orthodox Jew, he is a rabbi, or has been a rabbi and a cantor for many years, and he's still Orthodox, so, you know, just if you're wondering how he could be on the air at this point, that is how. We're through the magic of digital tape right here.
Magic of digital tape. Isn't that amazing?
I know. I still think Scotch tape is magical.
Right?
Well, I'm sorry, what?
People can download this and listen to it on their portable devices at some point, too?
Absolutely. Well, it would have to be either a phone or a computer or something like that. You couldn't download it into a coffee maker. That wouldn't do, you know, you any good. Or an electric razor. It would have to be something where you could actually listen to audio files. That kind of a device.
That's a good thing, because having a big beard, I don't have an electric razor, so... I'll use my phone.
You need to go to a Russian barber, just because they know how to deal with that kind of scraggly hair. When did you get the nickname, the King of Broadway? Because you've never been on Broadway, have you?
I have never been on a physical Broadway stage.
Uh-huh.
However, I have done many Broadway readings. I played Shlomo Carlbach in the original incarnation of
Soul Doctor. Yeah, that's coming. That's back on off Broadway. Maybe you might audition again to get back in there.
Yeah, that's okay. They've changed it. They've changed it enough where now they're not using Shlomo as an older man. They're using a 30-something year old. And as good an actor as I am, I don't think I can pull off 30 anymore.
I know. I know the feeling. Believe me. So what read? This is kind of cool.
The Broadway moniker is a very, very interesting story.
Oh, please, yes, tell me.
The short of it is, before I moved from Miami to New York, I had been doing karaoke in a lesbian sports bar.
I don't mind the lesbian part. In fact, I'm very much for the lesbian part. But karaoke? Did someone put a gun to your head?
No, it's interesting. My life took a little bit of a left-hand turn, and I found myself at a crossroads of deciding what to do with my life. And I was at a friend's birthday party. There was a guy set up to do karaoke, and let's just say there was a little bit of liquor involved, perhaps. I got up to sing karaoke, and what does Rabbi Ellie know? He knows Jewish music and show tunes.
Okay.
So I got up and did some show tunes, and I must have impressed the host of the karaoke, because he brought me back up several times, and at the end of the party, he came over to me and gave me his card and asked me to please come over to his karaoke sessions that he had in Fort Lauderdale and perform over there. And so I did that.
Yeah.
One thing led to another, and I gained quite a following there. And my groupies that used to come three, four nights a week to hear me sing at karaoke.
This is so beyond understanding. Yeah. There are karaoke groupies?
Karaoke groupies, yes. They liked to hear me sing, and they would know which venues I would be at, which nights, and they would come and hang out. I had over a dozen of them. They used to come on a regular basis. They were not singers. They just loved to come hear music.
Good
and
God!
So I was traveling back and forth to New York. The group had gotten together and pushed me to go audition for Man of La Mancha back in the early 2000s. And I came to New York, and I was at Colony Music, which unfortunately doesn't exist.
Oh, yes, Colony Music, yes. I remember that place.
I brought back a karaoke CD of The Producers, which had a song on it that I absolutely loved. I used to be the king of old Broadway. And I just thought that would be a great song to do at karaoke because nobody else was going to do it because it just came out. And I was there at the sports bar, the lesbian sports bar in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And after I finished singing, the hostess, who, by the way, was a lesbian Fort Lauderdale sheriff.
Aren't they all? Yeah, okay. Are you sure she was a sheriff, or was she just wearing chaps?
No. That was her day job. And she said, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ellie, the king of Broadway. And people just started calling me that. And a few months later, when I was looking to make a website, just out of curiosity, I typed in www.thekingofbroadway.com. Nobody owned it. And 5 minutes later, it was mine, and it still is today.
Now, let me ask you, Ellie.
The way I got my moniker was singing show tunes in a lesbian sports bar in Fort Lauderdale.
But let me ask you a semi-serious question, though. You are you have been, as you say, a rabbi, studied with Chabad. So you're not like a conservative or reformed or reconstructionist or post-constructionist or orthodox or paradox or whatever. You know, you studied with the real deal, the Hats
real
and
deal.
The Stroimels. How do you reconcile that with lesbians, gays, etc.? Shouldn't you be right-wing and say, oi, they're singing against God, etc., and blech, and don't give them rights and don't let them get... Would you marry a gay couple?
Well I would not rule it out. I haven't done it yet. But, you know, there's a difference between cutting yourself off from society and living with the times. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe, known as the Alter Rebbe, said you have to live with the times. And part of Chabad's philosophy has always been outreach, bringing Jews not familiar with their own heritage back to the fold and teaching them their heritage. So if I were to rule out all of these people and not associate with them, how would I have them at my Friday night dinner?
But with the Chabadniks,
about Shabbos, and to tell them the Parsha.
Yeah, but the thing is, would the Chabadniks want to invite them and then convert them, as it were, to heterosexuality?
I don't think that's the point.
Good.
I think the point is to follow Torah and do mitzvah. And, you know, what happens after that is up to them.
Okay. I mean, that's a fairly liberal viewpoint, considering your being an Orthodox rabbi from, etc. You know, I don't think the Satmars would feel necessarily the same way.
No, but you'll find most Chabad rabbis are more of the don't ask, don't tell. You know, when I introduce myself, I don't walk into a room and say, hi, I'm Ellie, I'm an Orthodox rabbi, and here's my philosophy. And so most Chabad rabbis would say, as long as you're not walking into shul and saying, "Hi, I'm, you know, Joe Schmo, I'm gay, and this is the guy I sleep with every night," you're more than welcome in shul, because most people don't do that.
Okay. I mean, there's also the thing.
Into a shul and talk about what goes on in their bedroom.
Well, actually, the Bible is full of stuff that goes on in the bedroom. You can't find a chapter in there that someone isn't begetting this and begetting that and stripping the wrong person.
That's only in the beginning. After that.
And to be honest, and I'm not saying this is a good or bad thing, either way, but you have 10 children. So the odds are one of them may grow up to be gay. If it's a 10% kind of a thing.
So far not, but yeah, the odds are there.
And you would feel, I hope, the same about that particular child as you do about all the others. I hope.
Absolutely. My emphasis is on Torah and mitzvahs. As long as you're you know, keeping Shabbos, keeping kosher, trying to do these things. You know, everybody's got challenges, but as long as you're trying to do these things, that's what I taught them, and I would hope that they would follow that.
Now, my other question for you about all this is that you have 10 children, Jewish children, which means presumably all of them are going to college at some point. How the hell, since you're in the cabaret field and the acting field doing background work, I don't know what your wife does, but how do you afford 10 children in New York?
Listen, it's not easy. My kids are not in New York. Three of them are living in New York now, but most of the family is in Florida, in Miami and Fort Lauderdale and North Miami Beach area.
Okay. How many are most grown at this point, I guess? Is that the deal?
Yeah, my youngest is going to be 21 in August.
Oh, Mazel Meklik. So they've flown the nest, they're off the coop, they're out of here. But
yep.
Must have been difficult to raise them for the past 20, 30 years. Well, you were a computer guy, right?
Yes, I did computers for many, many years. I worked for Radio Shack and other organizations.
Well, is 10 cheaper than 8 or something like that? I mean, 10 kids. How did you deal?
Once you get past 3 or 4, it doesn't even make a difference, because they start to amuse themselves. They start to take care of themselves. By the time one of your kids is, you know, 7 or 8 years old, the baby becomes their baby, and they want to help. And so the kids were always very good at helping each other out, helping out with homework, helping out around the house with chores. So, you know, it was really, really cool. It was fun growing up. Myself, I was an only child.
Wow.
Kind of an only child. My father's also an only child. So to me, having this constant traffic and this crew around was pretty special. In addition, you know, our house is a Chabad house, and so we always had people over, and it was very rare the front door was locked. So, you know,
there was always, as we said, traffic.
There were always people there. Yeah, there were always people there. If we didn't have 15, 20 people around the Shabbos table, it was a lonely Shabbos.
Do you have 16, 20 grandchildren at this point?
No, only 7 to 900.
Only 7, good God. Well, you're not exactly 90 yet. Wait
no,
a couple of years.
I'm not. I'm only 20, I don't know about
that. Oh.
I don't know what the driver's license says. Bye.
So let me ask you, moving back to the entertainment field, what are your favorite roles that you have played?
Oh, wow. The favorite roles that I've played. I did enjoy playing Shlomo. I liked the Jewish aspect of it.
I would imagine so. Well, I mean, well, he doesn't molest anybody in that musical, so that's a good thing.
I think the greatest role was the one that I never actually got to play.
Oh, this is an amazing story, ladies and gentlemen. This is the best story for us to go out on with Ellie, the King of Broadway. Of all things, of all plays, of all shows, that this man, and if you go to his website, what is your website?
TheKingOfBroadway.com.
TheKingOfBroadway.com. You go there, you get a look at this guy with the beard and the bigness, and you would figure, oh, well, he must have done 20, 30, 80 different productions of Fiddler on the Roof. How many have you done?
It's the role I was born to play,
right?
But never have yet.
You have have you ever been in a production? Did you ever play Laser Wolf or something?
I was, actually, Tevye is the role that broke the camel's back. You know, they say the straw that broke the camel's back?
Uh-huh.
That was the catalyst for my finally leaving Miami and moving to New York City. I was cast in a South Florida production as Tevye.
Yeah.
They broke for the summer. Right after the summer, I got an email from the director about 2 weeks before rehearsal started that the director had decided that he wanted to make his return to the stage after 20 years of directing, and that he was going to be taking the role of Tevye, and that I could be Laser Wolf if I wanted.
And that just, that broke your heart, basically. I mean, Laser Wolf is a pretty good role, but still.
Yep, that was it.
And actually, there's another Fiddler on the Roof story that you tell going back much, much earlier, in the sense that you had suggested somewhere that, it may have been in school or a community theater, that they do Fiddler on the Roof, and they declined. Why?
My high school musical theater teacher had promised me that for my senior year, we could do Fiddler on the Roof, and that I could be Tevye. For all my dedication and hard work in high school, all the different roles that I played, all the mishigas I had to put up with because the drama department, our drama teacher, did not like musicals. So he refused to do them. So it fell on the choral music director to do the musicals. And they were two different departments, and it was a war every single year. But when it came summertime, and school was about to start, and our dear musical teacher was going to get rights for the high school to do the musical, the principal at the time told her that he felt that Fiddler was too ethnic a play for a public high school to do.
Wow. Too ethnic. Okay. And he wasn't even using that the way that the TV producers and things would use it back in the 60s and 70s when he said, oh, what they meant was too New York, which was what they meant was too Jewish. And just too ethnic. But
too ethnic. But he meant too Jewish. Yeah, he meant too Jewish.
Because I love the capper on this story. And the irony.
Irony is that right after we announced that we were doing The King and I instead.
Exactly. Because, you know, The King and I isn't remotely ethnic. Not in any way, shape, or form.
Yes.
What a moron.
Alemany Catholic High School announced that they were doing Fiddler on the Roof.
I didn't realize there was a double irony there. I only know the part about the picking The King and I instead. And I didn't realize that then a Catholic high school grabbed it. That's wonderful.
Catholic high school decided to do it because I guess it wasn't too ethnic for them.
So are you doing a Fiddler song? I know there isn't really a Hanukkah song in Fiddler.
No, there's no Fiddler songs in the show, but there's rumors that Fiddler is coming back to Broadway in 2015 with Bartlett Sher directing and Danny Burstein, who's currently in Cabaret, starring in it as Tevye. And I've started my campaign to be his understudy and be Laser Wolf.
Good for you. I think it's more than a rumor. It's happening.
Have influence.
So, yes, Bartlett.
Your listeners have influence.
If you're listening, Bartlett, and I know you do, check this man. Give it, at least give Ellie the King of Broadway an audition. He has certainly earned that much. An audition and maybe an understudy as, you know, under Danny Burstein, who, by the way, has been on this radio program. So,
See, Danny's a wonderful person. I consider Danny a friend. We chat on Facebook when he has time, and I see him out a lot. And we've talked about it, and he said he'd be interested, but I don't think it's always up to him. But we'll see where it goes.
He can drop a word in Bartlett's ear. You never know. Could happen.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
I hope for your sake and for all our sakes that you do get into Fiddler on the Rev, even if it's just quote-unquote Laser Wolf. I hope it works out for you, that we see you on Broadway, since you are the king of Broadway, Ellie.
Good to be the king.
It's great to be. It is so good to talk to the king here on Dave's Gone By. Let's remind people one more time that they can see you live Sunday and Monday at the Metropolitan Room in Manhattan on 22nd Street, right off 6th, or between 5th and 6th Avenue. Go to metropolitanroom.com for tickets and information for the second annual Chanukah show, which also features Barry Levitt as the conductor and the piano player. And just a last question for the delightful Ellie, the King of Broadway. Now that the kids have flown the roost and you're sort of settled, what do you see yourself doing? Like, you know, you're doing these two concerts, but what's ahead for you in the next month or half a year or a year?
Well, I have a wonderful role coming out in a movie called The Cobbler with Adam Sandler.
Oh.
That'll be out early 2015. I'm in the first scene of the movie. We have a whole scene that takes place in 1903, and it's all in Yiddish.
Wow!
It was a great scene to film, and I just did a role with Michael Pitt and Nina Arianda in a movie called Rob the Mob.
Rob the Mob. Nina Arianda, I think she won the Tony for that Venus and Fur play, right? Did she win the Tony? She was nominated, I know that. So do you have any Adam Sandler anecdotes or stories? Did you get to talk to him, or did you just do the scene and he went to his trailer? And
I did the scene. He was not in our scene. He's in the current day part of the story. A flashback to set it up, but I did get to meet him. He thanked us all for participating. He was quite a gracious host, and he was there for our read-through of the scene before we actually did it, and then he had to fly back to Los Angeles to take care of some business. But we heard some reviews from the Toronto Film Festival, and the critics absolutely loved the first scene of the movie, so let's hope that it's a big hit.
From your mouth to Hashem's ears. Let me ask you, who is the most famous?
Sorry. 2015 is going to be a year of reinvention. I'm not exactly sure what direction I'm going yet. I have a website called BroadwayKingdom.com where I do pretty much the same thing that you do here. I do video interviews with celebrities.
Ooh, like who?
People can go see that there. Oh, I've got all kinds of people on there. I have a wonderful, wonderful interview with Hal Linden.
Oh!
Of Barney Miller fame.
Yes, he was on our show too. We talk to Hal Linden as well. We travel in the same circles.
We do. Last summer I did an interview with Bruce Valanche.
Oh, yes. A gay person, yes.
With Kate Clinton, who's also a gay comedian. Continuing with that, and I do some theater reviews there. And
what's that website again?
BroadwayKingdom.com.
BroadwayKingdom.com. If nothing else, you have a knack for choosing URLs.
Well, listen, I figured if I'm the king of Broadway, I need to have a kingdom, right?
This is true. And as it happens, at the moment, I'm a little unsettled in my tummy. I need to use the throne,
Broadway,
as it were.
Kingdom.
So, thank you for granting us an audience in your beautiful kingdom, Ellie, the king of Broadway. I wish you only more success, a joyful Chanukah show that you're doing at the Metropolitan Room, and years of naches from your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. What else can I wish you?
Amen.
Oh, and I wish you a happy Chanukah.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Rabbi Saul Solomon, on the Dave's Gone By show, which appears on UNC Radio. Who knew?
Well, now you know, and we all know.
I do.
We
now I'm going to be a big fan.
Thank you. Likewise.
Thank you.